Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Eurogamer podcast. I'm Bertie, I'm your host, and every fortnight I try to find an interesting person from around the world of games to talk to. Today, someone who's right at the forefront of the accessibility movement in games. It's an area we've seen huge progress in the last couple of years through games like The Last of Us Part 2, Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and more recently, in fact, very recently, Forza Horizon 5. And a lot of this probably wouldn't have happened without people pushing for it and making developers do better and making accessibility a much more visible topic. He's a regular contributor to Eurogamer. He is Vivek Gohil. Welcome to the show, Vivek.
Hi, Robert. It's great to be part of the show.
It's wonderful to have you here. I've admired your pieces on the site for many years. You've been writing for us for about 3-4 years now?
Yeah, 3 years, which has been
fantastic.
It's been very fun. It kind of helped me start with accessibility.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point we'll come on to in a bit. So, talking of Forza Horizon 5, I was just watching your video review of the accessibility options in the game. And what really struck me in it was your sense of delight, your sense of surprise almost, with how comprehensive the accessibility options are in the game. I guess I wondered, where did that surprise come from? Did you not expect it?
Well, I think for a lot of games, they have been like accessibility. Like The Last of Us 2 was kind of the last game that kind of surprised me as much as Forza Horizon, because I think the options in Forza Horizon are very kind of comprehensive, like auto-steering and braking and kind of all the other options that you can have, and you can remap buttons to the sticks, and I think a lot of these options were like quite amazing in a way, thinking that this is what I've always thought driving games should have, and we finally find a game that kind of has these options for people like kind of with a disability like mine.
So something I saw you doing in the video was remapping your controls, from what I understand about you, is something you need to do by necessity in the games that you play, because of the way the buttons that you can press with your hands and how that works. And in the game, you were talking about remapping. I see you can do stuff as granular as change a thumbstick press, say, to the left, to have its own independent function, and even move the steering onto the bumper. Is that something novel? Is that something new?
Oh, it's definitely novel. I've never seen that in a driving game, but it actually makes sense, because a driving game, kind of moving left and right, you don't need to use up and down. So you've got a lot of other options to remap them kind of somewhere else. So it's kind of making all the buttons work independently, but you can kind of position it anywhere, which it just makes sense completely with a driving game, because you don't usually use the camera, so you can assign buttons to the left and right stick. Yeah, it just gives disabled players a lot more options and choice about, this is my ability and I need this button here. Or also, sometimes it's just kind of you experiment with the options. I always do that. Because sometimes I think, oh, let me just change it and see if it kind of helped me. Because sometimes you don't know until you've tried.
Yeah, quite. How long does it normally take you to to remap the buttons in a game. Say another game comes along without perhaps the options built into the game in the same way they are in Forza Horizon 5. How long would it take you to kind of change the controls to be able to play it?
Well, for me, if there's a game without accessibility settings, my setup, I use a kind of a device called the Titan 2, which kind of allows me to use whatever control I want on whatever kind of console, and then also I can write scripts, so I can write code to code into my own remapping and toggles and stuff, but that usually takes me like an hour.
Wow.
But with games like Forza Horizon and Miles Morales, if the remap team's already there, it's way better. It's a lot more easier because when I remap the buttons, I have to remember that, oh, I've changed this button to R1 rather than kind of the icons won't pop up in the right way. So there's a lot of memory that has to go into it. But if you have remapping, then all of that kind of stress is decreased, really. Because you don't have to close the game to change everything.
Yeah. So I heard you make a pretty bold claim in the Forza Horizon 5 review that it had the best accessibility of any driving game you've ever played. Did I hear that right?
Yes, you did. That is a bold statement. But I stand by it. I definitely stand by it.
That's great. And of course, it lays the gauntlet down, as it were, for a series like Gran Turismo.
Yeah, which I mentioned in my video. I was looking, kind of forward to seeing what they would do with accessibility.
We'll see. Sony, the ball is in your court. I guess, finally, before we kind of rewind a little bit, how does it make you feel when a game like The Last of Us Part 2 or Morales or Forza Horizon 5 comes along and offers you this kind of accessibility? What does that mean to you? How does it make you feel?
Well, it's really a difficult feeling because it's like you're amazed and shocked that, oh my God, like I feel respected by these game developers, that kind of me, they are respecting my abilities and giving me choice over how I play. So it feels a lot more like the developers are working with you.
Yeah.
But it also kind of reminds me that kind of a lot more games need to have a bit more accessibility in them. So it's like, it's very good, but then it's also kind of it's putting the bar up for next game. So it's kind of quite interesting to see what will happen next. But I probably can say for a lot of disabled gamers, like, it's just a really, really happy feeling that this game developer does kind of respect us a lot.
Yeah, it's lovely to see. So I want to rewind a bit because I like doing this. And if we can, I'd like to go back to a young Vivek. And ideally, the moment that games appear in your life, do you remember what that moment was and what happened? What the effect, perhaps, that games had on your life was?
Well, when I was young, I had a Game Boy that played like Mario and Sonic, and I love those games. But kind of what made me like a console gamer was in 2001 when I first played Halo.
Okay.
Like, I played that and I thought, oh my God, I need this game. So I got a console, and kind of that started kind of my gaming journey off. So like, I'm very excited for kind of Halo Infinite, but because it kind of really made me a gamer, I thought, yeah, from now on, this is what I wanted. Because it was just such an amazing game. I never kind of seen a game like that before. You think, oh, look at the kind of the Halo ring when you look up. It's just amazing. So it kind of hooked me for life. And then I like to kind of, I'm very into like comic book and superheroes. So I used to play games like X-Men Legends and kind of Batman Arkham City was, oh gosh, that was the best game I ever played, really. I still feel that because it was at a time where I just like played that game all the time. It just feels like going back to my childhood in a way, which is kind of nice. I do revisit the game occasionally because, but I would say I thought that was my favorite superhero game, but recently, kind of, I think Guardians of the Galaxy pushed Arkham City out slightly with the narrative. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting because it hasn't, you know, Avengers had a tricky time. So, although it did have a good story, but Guardians of the Galaxy has come out and made a success. It's a real talking point for that game, which is interesting and shows that there's always potential there with these things.
And I want to say also, Guardians of the Galaxy has quite a few really great accessibility options.
Okay.
Like, you can adapt difficulty a lot as, like, on different levels. Like, when you use your powers, kind of, it slows down time as, like, time is still going on when it slows it down, but there's an option. If you turn it up to full, then it will pause the game, so that kind of gives me time to kind of plan what I'm doing and rest sometimes. I can just tap that and just think, okay, I'm a bit tired at the minute. I just need a few minutes. So it kind of, options like that are very good for accessibility. And especially for me, yeah.
Do you have any idea what the accessibility options are going to be like in Halo Infinite when it arrives?
Well, I like in the videos, kind of they've talked about accessibility in a way. Like they've got remapping, which they never had in a game. They had like presets, which at the time was quite good, really. Definitely was good for kind of me and other gamers, but now it's like full remapping and like toggles for aiming and kind of, there is a lot of options, so I'm kind of looking forward to kind of reviewing that soon.
So, going back in time a bit to young Vivek, how did you interact with games back then? Is it a similar way to now, or was it different in a slight way?
I think it was very different because at that time, I was like 15 and I've got Duchenne muscular dystrophy, so I keep getting kind of weaker and weaker. So when I was 9, I stopped walking.
Okay.
So through my life, I've kind of had to kind of lose function. So gaming kind of helped me escape my reality. Kind of because I was quite lonely, I was stuck in bed. So
yeah,
kind of with a lot of the characters, it felt like my friends. And kind of it made my life like positive and happy. Whereas now, like I game for fun and work because my life is quite good at the minute. So like it's not fully used for escapism, it's just for kind of entertainment and a hobby rather than very kind of emotionally necessary like it was when I was younger, really.
Was there a game in particular that you escaped to a lot? Because I was looking down on your blog, I was looking down the list of games and they do have a tendency to be these kind of third person kind of action adventures which are in big immersive worlds that you live in. Is there one that you would go back to? Perhaps it was Arkham City.
Well, it was Arkham City, but I think that the game that kind of helped me escape a lot was Red Dead Redemption.
Okay.
Like, I just love the game and the story. And I like animals and stuff. I'm into nature. So when there's games where you can walk around, look at like nature, Now, even in Red Dead Redemption 2, it's when I was just walking around in nature, kind of like filming kind of animals. So I like those kind of things because in reality, I can't do any of those things. Yeah. So in a way, it's providing me a glimpse into a life that I maybe can't fully experience in reality, but I am experiencing in a way through games. And because games are getting graphically like realistic, it's easier to kind of escape into those kind of worlds in a way.
Yeah. So I was reading your blog again, and I saw that you've owned pretty much every console since PlayStation 2, except the Nintendo ones. Is there a reason for that? Perhaps you just can't stand Mario's moustache?
No, I love Mario games. I love my Game Boy. In Game Boy Advance, and all, like, I had a SNES. But I think when I got Halo and the consoles, kind of, I kind of got more attracted to like non-2D platformers, whereas like, yeah, because of the immersive world, and kind of I was just amazed by it, whereas with Mario, kind of I played it and it was lovely, and but I always wanted more, slightly a different kind of gaming experience. But the funny thing is now I'm going back to 2D platformers and playing them, like Guacamelee. I've been playing that, I love that, and a lot of other ones, because I never really kind of, well, in a way, I thought our 2D platformers were mainly for like younger gamers rather than kind of older gamers, so I was a bit kind of judgmental in that way slightly, whereas now I just enjoy any type of game I'm playing, really.
And when you had these older consoles, you talked about having your degenerative condition. So was it becoming more challenging to control the games? Was one console perhaps better for that than another console?
Yeah, well, I think handheld things, I was able to do it until, let's say, like 12, but afterwards I couldn't hold the screen in the right position and press buttons.
Okay.
So it was like an accessibility issue, but kind of at that time I wouldn't have thought, oh, it's an accessibility issue.
Okay.
It's just, oh, I can't play the game. Whereas now that I'm in accessibility, I can look back and think that was accessibility.
Yeah.
Kind of issue. Yes. And also Nintendo, I never really gravitated to kind of games on that. I just like Mario and Sonic. Kind of, I wish I played games like Castlevania and stuff, because, and Metroid, because I feel like I missed out on them.
Okay. And I mentioned that something else I discovered while reading your blog was that you're very fond of a quote. I was reading the About You section, and you've got quotes from Andrew Ryan in there, from Bioshock. You quote Metal Gear Solid. You've got Sully from Uncharted 3. And you've even, and this is my favorite, you've got Kreia from Knights of the Old Republic too. And I'll read this one because I like it. And maybe, I can't remember what her voice sounds like, but perhaps you were expecting some surprise for me to reveal a secret that had eluded you. Something that would change your perspective of events, shatter you to your core. There is no great revelation, no great secret. There is only you. I love that. And I think all the quotes you've chosen as well share a theme that's quite close to your life and work. Do you note these quotes down as you go along while you're playing?
Well, no. When I was writing the blog, sometimes I choose a game and I go through I search online for like videos of like walkthroughs, or look on the wiki sites, because I have always like quotes, and I just love kind of words, really. I've always kind of enjoyed reading and writing and being creative. in kind of expressing myself, because for me, I express myself really well when it comes to games, because I've learned so much of life from games. So like quotes like that are very special to me, because I remember like playing the game, and I think for me, games connect emotionally. So these quotes are the ones that kind of stick out at me, because like they're very profound, and they are talking kind of about life, really.
Is there a favorite quote, or are there just too many to?
Well, I think that there's so many to kind of pick from, but I think I'd say quotes from like Star Wars games, they're probably my top kind of top group of them, because I love Star Wars like ridiculously a lot.
Does that go for the recent films as well?
Let's not go there.
Okay, enough said. So
I love the Mandalorian though, and Grogu. You can't hate.
No,
I can't hate great game.
No, I agree. I particularly, as the second series got a bit further on, I liked it. Also, Dune. I don't know if you've seen Dune recently.
No, I really want to see that.
Really, it's very. There's a Star Wars vibe to it, which, you know, which came first, but it's well worth seeing. So, for years, you're playing games as a passionate hobby. It's a kind of escapism for you. Do you have any inkling as a younger man that you want to work in games or pursue some kind of career there?
Definitely not. But like I used to say, oh, I'd love to work in games, because I thought you just play games all day and stuff. Whereas, so it was like a childhood dream, but it wasn't really on my cards, really. It just only happened because when I got the PS4, I couldn't use a controller at all.
Yeah, so let's...
So it was really... and I thought the only kind of thing that I could do was actually give up gaming.
Yeah, so that is a big moment for you, because gaming has meant so much to you for so long, and all of a sudden you've opened the box, the PlayStation 4 box, and you're excited about playing Dragon Age Origins, I read, which is correct. That's very good.
Inquisition.
And you're excited about playing this, and then you discover, well, what do you discover, and how does, what's the moment, if you can take us back there, because that must have been, well, it was a big moment for you.
Yeah, so the issue was like the PS3 control, my hands kind of were formed to that, and I was very good at using kind of that controller. But like usually I buy a console thing, you know, obviously I'm able to play. But because I got weak, I only realized that I kind of need a lot of help in gaming, but I didn't even know there was help out there. I didn't even know about kind of accessibility. But like when I had to decide to stop gaming, I got really really depressed, and it kind of highlighted to me that gaming, how important gaming is to my life. So then I searched for kind of a way to start gaming, and that's how I found accessibility. And straight away I thought, this is what I want to do now.
So I read that it was in this moment, you know, when you were feeling really low after the PlayStation 4 had come out, and you realized you couldn't use the pad, really. And you searched around and you found a company, a charity called Special Effect. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that is what happened. I found them. And when they came down, it was a revolution, because they understood what kind of needs I had, and they said, okay, we'll give you a PS4 controller that's lighter and easier to press. And then through that, I managed to carry on gaming. So in a way, I thought I shouldn't have given up. There is always a solution.
It's tough, though. It's tough knowing that afterwards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was just tough. My mom realized how different I was because it just didn't feel like I was kind of happy at all.
Yeah. So Special Effect, for listeners or watchers who don't know, is a UK charity that helps people create bespoke solutions if they have physical challenges so they can play games. If you've ever been to an EGX show, you may have seen them there. They often have a stand and showing some of the work they do, some of the creations that they've built. And they do life-changing work, which is, I'll pop them in the show's description so you can check them out. But they do life-changing work, which is something I guess you would agree with.
Definitely, I would agree. And the other good thing is, it is free. Their help is free. They just assist you. So it's nothing expensive, because it could get kind of expensive getting all these adjustments. But because they're a charity, they're amazing for a disabled gamer. They're just amazing. They fix gaming for you.
So, as you said, they kind of helped you build a bespoke PlayStation 4 controller. So it was lighter. It had looser triggers and buttons and thumbsticks. It had some grip helpers, and there was a stand, I think, so that you didn't have to always hold the controller up. I mean, having gone from feeling awful to getting this support and now a way to play again.
But the thing is, the support wasn't all at the start. The stand I have is a recent thing.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Because I got a bit weak. I couldn't actually hold the lighter control. So I they made the stand and kind of that revolutionized it, because I was actually able to play better than I played before.
I see.
Just because of the support and the right support, I could play as good as I used to, which I thought would never be possible. But here it is, it's possible.
So from this moment of feeling, awful to going and getting this support, what kind of happens along this, as far as I understand, is you find this new sense of purpose, if you like, and the purpose is accessibility. And what happens then? What does that mean for you? What do you start doing? What does that purpose do?
Well, for me, it just seemed to happen, because I started. Because initially in my blog, I used to write about kind of living with my condition, and I never even wrote about gaming, but the first gaming kind of article I wrote for my blog was very, kind of, it resonated with a lot of people in the, I was with the Muscular Dystrophy UK charity. So through that blog, it helped so many other people to kind of think, oh, I have the same issues. What can I do? So that snowballed, and then kind of I carried on writing articles for gaming, and then kind of the Eurogamer editor Christian, he kind of out of the blue messaged me on Twitter saying, oh, I've read all your articles and we really think you would be a great fit for Eurogamer, so do you want to write articles for me? And that's when I fully kind of felt I am not an imposter. This is the right place for me.
Oh, that's lovely.
And through that, it just snowballed into other things. Like I've kind of worked with Microsoft testing out the Xbox adaptive controller and stuff for PlayStation as well, and game developers. So it just snowballed, really.
Yeah, so
but the other thing is I met so many great people in accessibility, and they all kind of help you to want to do better and just evolve, really. It's a lovely kind of community to belong to.
So I briefly hung around this community earlier this year at the Games Accessibility Conference, or GA Conf for short. And I was in the Discord while you gave your talk, and you dropped this incredible line, a Spider-Man themed line, while praising Miles Morales. And the line was, "With great accessibility comes great inclusivity." And the place just erupted. It was like a mic drop moment. It was like a star turn. And you seem like a kind of star among the community. You seem like a fairly high profile member of that community now.
Well, like, let me talk about the it's kind of, I like to make quotes up that kind of revolve around, kind of make sense in the game as well as the overall. Yeah, I just love like being clever in that way. But yeah, like I do think this community has really helped me to grow out of my shell, because when I was younger, I didn't really communicate that much to people. But in this community, I just feel safe. So when I feel safe, I'm able to think I really want to help. Kind of just continue, because it's a very supportive community, and I don't think I'm as big as a lot of my other friends that I have online on the community, but I like to try to kind of use my experience really to help other gamers, because that is ultimately what I want to do. Because I've got a lot of friends that have this condition, and that they just stop gaming at all. They don't game because it's not accessible for them and things like that. So that's really upsetting when I know. So I need to use this platform to educate developers about my condition. Because like, there's been a lot of work done with blind gamers and deaf gamers and hard of hearing kind of gamers at the minute, but I think my type of weakness, like mobility issue, that kind of hasn't really been tackled as much as it could be. And I see slow changes happening, because like in Far Cry 6, I've always like sprinting, you have to press L3. But I've always said, if you could just sprint by pushing the left stick fully forward, that would actually help disabled gamers and get rid of a stick click. And that's exactly what Ubisoft did. So I've said a lot of things like that, and it's good to actually see that information has been listened to by developers.
Because that's what it seems to me that a lot of this is. I was watching a Naughty Dog GA conference talk about The Last of Us 2. And what struck me while watching that was how much they actually took from the accessibility community by watching the GA conference and embedding themselves with that community and even inviting people from there to come and advise on the game. And to me, it seems like good accessibility starts there.
Yeah, that is it. If you put accessibility at the start when you design it with accessibility, everything is easier. You can't just add it on at the end. it never works. If you embed it in your design practices and involve disabled gamers, like accessibility consultants earlier, then you can pick their brain and add a lot of options in. Because I think part of gaming now, there has to be accessibility in a game. I don't think, I think it should be a standard that accessibility settings are necessary. Like, I'm not saying every game should have like loads of accessibility settings, because I think that's thinking too much. You can't always have a game with perfect accessibility. Accessibility needs to evolve. So if your game design's evolving by including disabled gamers, then the whole industry changes, because accessibility is a part of the design. It's not like we've designed a game, now what do we add on?
So what does good accessibility look like to you? How do you know when you play a game if it's got good accessibility?
Well, the first thing I do is look at the settings. Like, when I do a game, I'm like, options straight away. What's in it? Do they have an accessibility menu? Or even sometimes you don't need accessibility menu. If you... Like, accessibility is just good usability, really. Because people do get a bit, like, the word accessibility is a bit misunderstood sometimes. Yeah, so like people think, oh, it just means like an easy mode or something like that, but it's not. It's just making the gameplay friendlier to a lot of people. But I think then I play the game and see like how does it affect. But I think sometimes I know a game has great accessibility when I look at a feature and I think, oh my god, that's perfect, but I never thought, like, I never even realized that would be a helpful option. In The Last of Us, you had, like, a stone down when aiming, and I thought, oh my god, that is perfect for me, but I didn't even think about that mistake. And it shows that, like, disabled gamers have been part of the design if there's features that and it surprised me.
So something else I picked up on while I was watching the GA Conf earlier this year was a feeling or a sense of change, a feeling that perhaps we are at a tipping point for accessibility in games, where more and more teams are putting in the time and effort to do this right. Obviously, there's The Last of Us Part 2, which, as you say, had a strong focus on players without sight and can be platinumed by players without sight. In fact, you wrote a piece for us with that as part of the headline. And in that piece, there's a line from you describing 2020, the year 2020, as undoubtedly the greatest year for the gaming accessibility community since the release of the Xbox Adaptive Controller in 2018.
I think it was, because 5 years ago, accessibility wasn't even talked about, or it wasn't even recognized as necessary. But in the past 5 years, it's just exploded. And I would say 2020 was kind of the year that it exploded, because since then, like, a lot of, like, even like Eurogamers started kind of writing about accessibility, and like a lot of other publications are. So that's a big change as well, because it shows that accessibility is something like in the mainstream, and even if you don't have a disability, it's quite interesting to kind of learn about accessibility, and you just get used to the having accessibility there. It's just like part of a game. So and then the developers have worked with a lot of Like, most of my friends have, like, they worked on, like, The Last of Us 2 and stuff. And that was, like, the biggest year, really, because I kind of came into accessibility at the right time.
So, how is 2021 doing by comparison?
Well, I think it's a funny year because of the pandemic, because there kind of hasn't been that many games that have come out. They've all been kind of delayed and stuff, but a lot of the games I've played, like Miles Morales, Guardians of the there has been kind of games with good accessibility. So I wouldn't say it's a bad year, but it's just a bit of a slow year. But the thing is, next year is going to be a big year with like games coming out practically every day. So
So what's your advice? Do you consult? You mentioned that maybe you've done some kind of consulting, or you've got some big things on the go. Are you consulting on game projects?
I'm doing a few things at the minute, but those pesky NDAs, so I can't say much.
They are pesky.
Yeah.
What's your general advice? If someone says to you, perhaps it's an indie developer who doesn't perhaps have the resources of a big company. If someone says to you, I want to have good accessibility in my game, what's your advice?
The thing is, for them, you need to look at the type of game you have and think about kind of small changes. Like indie developers, I'd say a lot of their games have great accessibility. And it's not just because they have loads of options. Sometimes there's one option, like in Celeste, they had invincibility. That changes the game a lot. So accessibility doesn't mean thousands of options or so many changes. Sometimes it's just one very clever addition. So I think so I like consulting with small developers is a lot easier because there's usually just a few people making the game and stuff. So accessibility is a bit kind of easier to create sometimes rather than like with a bigger company sometimes. So I wouldn't say indie games are bad at all. I think just the whole industry is doing well, but I do enjoy just what I do is just share my gaming experience with developers, and that helps kind of a lot. And then you just talk to them a lot more and test the games out. It is a great experience to be able to know that you're helping a game to be as inclusive as possible.
So, looking ahead to all the games that have kind of been, well, or maybe actually just to this Christmas, what games are you looking forward to that are coming up? What's going to be your
Well,
Christmas game?
I think it's definitely going to be Halo Infinite. Yeah, it's just that is just a special franchise for me. It's just recently I got Xbox Game Pass, so I played all the Halo games from 1 to 4,
Wow.
back to well 1 to 5. I mean, back to back. So, and I'm prepared for this one. And I've read like with games, I usually if they have books, I usually read them. So I've kind of read most of the Halo books and stuff. So kind of my brain's probably a Halo encyclopedia.
So, a final thought on accessibility before I ask you some questions that I've been asking everyone. I'm waving a pen around here for some reason. So, what are the big challenges left in accessibility? What are the main things, I guess, you want to see going ahead, maybe next year, maybe the year after? What are the big challenges still ahead, and what do you really want to see?
Well, the one big challenge for me at the minute is actual console hardware accessibility, because the accessibility setup I use, I need to use a DualShock 4, and I kind of use this adapter tied to 2, which I talked about earlier. But, like, initially it was able to work on PS5, but, like, one of the workarounds has been kind of blocked. So at the minute, I can't play on my PlayStation 5 until there was a solution done by kind of the people that make Titan 2. So I think a biggest challenge is to be able to keep your setups working with what, because all the work PlayStation developers have done, if the hardware isn't accessible, then there's kind of no point doing accessibility in the game if the console isn't accessible. So kind of there's that issue. So I really, at the minute, I really want to change that. That's what I'm kind of working on. And then moreover, I'm looking forward to the games and seeing what settings are going to come up the next year. So it's exciting, but I think disabled gamers and reviewers are going to be very busy next year.
In a good way, I hope.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
So the questions that I've been asking everyone, it's just three questions, and you can interpret them kind of as you like. And I think we may already know the answer to a couple of them. The first question is, first game. What was your first game?
First game, it was Super Mario World.
Okay.
Yeah, because my cousin, like, he had a SNES. He brought it down, and then, like, I played on that, and kind of I loved the game. Then I was pestering my mom, can I get a Game Boy? So then I played it on that, and that was the first game that I kind of played, really. And then Halo was the first game where kind of I really thought I need to be a game. Because I used to think, oh, Mario, I'm just doing it for fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. Last game. What was the last game you played?
Oh, the last game was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Have you finished it now?
Yeah, I did. Oh, it's so emotional. No, I did. I cried a few times. That's not like me at all. But yeah, it was a great game.
And the last question, and I feel like we already may know the answer to this. Best game.
Oh, best game. That's a tough one, really. It's very tough. I think I would still go for Batman Arkham City, but I think that's always going to be my greatest game. Even if there's other games that are maybe better, I've just, the feeling I got with that game is, that's the feeling kind of I'm always looking for in games. Is there another game that does it? But I think if I had to pick, like, current games, it would be Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow. What is that feeling with Arkham City? Is it that feeling of childhood that you talked about?
I think it is a feeling of childhood, because, like, I started reading Batman at that time, and then when I saw, oh my god, there's a game, and when I started, like, I played the demo, like, a lot, and I thought, this game, I need this game when it comes out. So, and when I first played it, I was just floored, like, what am I experiencing? This is incredible. You just felt like, but just everything was perfect. And I spent so many hours collecting everything.
just to,
like 100% in the game, and
just to be.
You know, when I was younger, I never do that. I just play, and but I thought, no, I need to do everything.
It's interesting. I wonder if it's possible for another game to have the same feeling. Because I feel sometimes like there's only one game that can, or perhaps a couple of games that can have that effect on us.
I think when you're younger and you get so excited and attached to a game, I think that game is always going to be with you.
Hmm.
Even if there's other games better, you still think, no, you're still there. I'm never going to forget you. But I think the game that got closer to me than Batman is Mass Effect, the whole trilogy. Those games were like just incredible. But like I like Batman more because I love comics, and it felt like, oh, I'm actually Batman. Yeah.
If you could have one comic turned into a game that isn't already a game, do you know which one it would be?
Yeah, I would say I'd love to see Daredevil.
Ah.
Because, especially because I'd also want like Insomniac to make Daredevil, because it can tie into Spider-Man a lot and Wolverine. The whole universe. So, and also because, like, Daredevil's blind, like, it would be incredible to have a character with a disability in a game where you can, like, beat people up.
It would be. I enjoyed the Netflix series.
Yeah.
At least for a season and a half, anyway.
Oh, really?
I think I went off it a little bit in the second series. It just...
slow.
Yeah, too many things going on, I think.
Yeah, I do agree, I think. But I think they picked the right actors.
Yes, yes.
And I really would love them to be somehow into the MCU. So.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed for the future. Vivek, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure meeting you, and it's always a pleasure reading your work on Eurogamer and seeing the effect that you and the accessibility community are having on games. Changes that benefit everyone, you know, not just the accessibility community or however people want to kind of understand that. So thank you for that, and thank you for this.
No, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm so glad to have this platform to talk about accessibility. It does feel special talking about accessibility to like Eurogamer or other kind of publications, because accessibility is worthy of talking about.
Absolutely. Well, Vivek, thank you. And to everyone else, we'll have a new podcast in a fortnight. Thank you for listening. Goodbye for now.
Bye, everybody.